Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I, as always, am Jason Ophir, here with Sherry Pang. Sherry, how's it going?
Pretty good, Jason. How are you?
Not too bad. I'm in a vacation week, so I get to relax and sit around, watch movies, and eat tacos. What have you been up to?
Well, I'm just getting off a tour. I just got home a little bit ago. And it's been hot, so it's kind of a little fatiguing, but, you know, it's good. I'm very blessed and, you know, doing gallery readings and I've been very blessed. But I don't know about this weather, but I can't wait until it gets back into maybe the 60s and the 70s. What about you?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the heat. Hopefully the heat wave goes away. As usual, I haven't been keeping my...
You know that by Wednesday and Thursday again. It's in the 90s, and it's going to climb up to 100.
Oh, Lord. Well, fortunately, that doesn't really affect me because I'm a subterranean dweller living in a basement, so it's always cold. But and I work in a laboratory, so it's cold there, so I don't really have to deal with it, thankfully.
Oh, wow. You're lucky. Absolutely.
Yeah, I know we had to change our guest this evening. We were supposed to have Clyde Lewis, and we were talking earlier, and you said he had a situation he has to deal with. So we're going to get him next week. Is that right?
That is correct, yes. Clyde Lewis has had a personal matter, and so he had to attend that, and we will return for sure next week. So in the meantime, we want to welcome a paranormal team. It's interesting how, you know, they're both so talented, and they just know their stuff. And they come from a research end, and it's so different because, you know, a lot of times they just, you know, they're not like full and glamorous and, oh, my God, look at the demons and everything. But what they do is they want to look for the findings and find their own investigations and research it to find out if it is true. What is it? You know, they do a lot of technical things, and I have a lot of respect for this team. They're very down to earth, really good guys, and I'm proud to say that I'm part of their team. So, you know, I'm not only a psychic medium for them, but also a remote viewer, and I'm also a consultant with them, and I'm very proud to be part of their team again.
Very cool, and I'll bring them on in just 2 seconds, but I noticed two little stories, and I don't have a lot of detail I wanted to mention before being our guests on. Did you hear about this meteor that blew up over Greenland relatively close to a U.S. military base up there?
No, I haven't, Jason.
Yeah, I guess there was a meteor exploded. I wasn't really clear whether it hit the ground or it exploded close to Thule military base. I don't know how you pronounce that, T-H-U-L-E, Thule. It was about 40 miles away, and it exploded with a 2-point-something kilotons of explosiveness. How do you like my English? Anyway, I thought that was interesting. I know we have a lot of people that look at the skies, and we get these things that slip through the atmosphere every once in a while. So I thought that was kind of scary. And then the other thing I just briefly read before the show started was there are these terrorists out there that are weaponizing drones. You know, we've talked about drones before on the show, and you know how popular they are, and they're trying to get new laws with operating drones within the U.S., and the military is obviously big into drones. But there have been some presidential assassination attempts around the world. The latest one was in Venezuela during a military parade-type thing, and somebody packed a drone with explosives and blew it up over the crowd. So I just thought that was interesting because we had guests on the show previously talking about drones, and the world's just getting crazier and crazier, folks.
It is crazy, and it's exciting in a way, but it's crazy at the same time.
Absolutely. So that's my news blurb.
Go ahead.
Oh, that's all I had. I just thought those two, not really paranormal, but I was just thinking of, you know, I'm always thinking about the apocalypse and bad things happening like the caldera in Wyoming exploding. So, yeah.
Wow. Hey,
the big one's coming.
On our guest.
All right. Well, everything's acting so glitchy for some reason. It's so strange.
Hello?
Can you hear me, Sherry?
I can hear you fine.
Okay. How about our guests? Are you in? That's very strange. There might be some technical difficulty. I'm not sure what's going on, but the studio is acting a little quirky. Let's try this again.
That's interesting. Wow.
It's aliens. It's giant meteors flying over the atmosphere. Hold on. Let's try this again here.
Okay.
I think we... Hello.
Well, I heard a beep on my end. I don't know if this is working.
Hey,
yeah,
y'all. There you are.
Okay, so that one, it did work this time.
Yay. So now we got to get Michael on.
It's acting really like it's thinking. It's in limbo. I'm trying to bring him on, and I'm just getting the circle thingy. That's
sounds like it's buffering, right?
Yeah. You know, this whole the blog talk thing works pretty well most of the times, but it does have times where it's glitchy and it's weird and just one of those times. So
technology.
It's thinking, and I don't think it's going to get better. Technology.
It's supposed to be easier with the computers, but then again, if you think about it, 99% of the headaches in your daily life is from computers. I mean,
absolutely.
I've worked for a month that everyone always is amazed. Like, you actually work on these, you do this stuff. Why do you hate them so much? Because I've dealt with them enough to know how much I hate them.
Is Michael online? Is he getting in or what?
Yeah, he's in what I like to refer to as electronic limbo right now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to hang up, and if Michael can call right back, hopefully we'll be out of the glitch. So I'm going to hang up on him right now. And it doesn't even want to hang up on him. That's fantastic. So if he should be able to – oh, wait, something's happening. I'll give you guys the play-by-play. It's okay, let's try this again here. Oh, Michael.
Hello.
Hi, hey, Michael.
Hello. We got you in.
Hey. I can hear you, but.
It's just being stubborn. It's being a little cranky right now.
Like I said, you got to love technology.
Absolutely.
Sometimes it can work against you, that's for sure.
Now, I'll make sure not to hit any buttons so it doesn't get any more glitchy. How are you guys doing this evening?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. Excited to talk a little bit about the paranormal. Now, for the listener's sake, if one of y'all can give us a little bio about what y'all are doing, or each of you, whoever wants to start.
Go ahead, Joe. He talks more than I do.
That's my whole get-rich-quick plan. I'm going to talk so much that people will start paying me to shut up.
That's why
it hasn't worked good. It's a plan in motion. But together we've been a research group now for over 10 years. We started in North Carolina, or when I lived in North Carolina, Michael's always lived in South Carolina. We started a group there called the Cape Fear Paranormal Research Group. Then when I moved to Canada, we still continued doing research and continued with a live internet talk show, much like what you guys are here, but we were actually on video, called The Paranormal Night Stalker. We continued with it, and we've turned it into a podcast, but in 2 weeks, actually 2 weeks from last night, 2 weeks from Friday, we are returning live again. It's not going to be video, but we are going to be doing a live broadcast every week on Friday. And now me and a couple of friends up here formed another group called Paranormal North Coast British Columbia. We're doing active field research and investigations here, working with mainly local like folklore and urban legend. Michael and I are still doing research and that kind of stuff. But that's where our main focus is right now. We do residential and, you know, business or any other investigation. But most of the stuff we've been doing, we have a Facebook page that we put up videos, try to get it every week. But again, with the technology issues I've been going through here recently, it's been a little more difficult. But that cover mainly on it is, like I said, kind of local folklore and urban legend.
God, I bet there's a lot of that, a lot of urban legends and stuff like that. Folklore is really interesting.
We are in, or I am, rather, I am in the extreme northwest of British Columbia. I'm far closer to Alaska or Russia than I am to the mainland U.S. So it is a completely other beast here. We basically, this is my main Bigfoot country and stuff like that. And it was funny, you were talking about the stuff that was going over the skies. We've had some rather strange lights around here for the past past week.
So I'm telling you, folks.
That's a lot of the activity here.
Something's brewing up in the skies. Call it aliens, maybe an apocalyptic meteor or something. But I've been seeing more and more UFOs stuff come across.
It was funny. During the blood moon, actually, one of the other members of TNBC, John, was pointing out what was told or released as Mars being next to the blood moon. He kept pointing out that it was changing spots in the sky. One night it was left to the moon. The next night it's right to the moon. The next night it's back left to the moon. And I hadn't paid attention to it. I just kind of would look up and see it. You don't pay a lot of attention to stars, but that made me start watching it. And he was absolutely right. It did like nightly switch sides of the moon. But you know what we might look at the sky and see is, you know, a foot or something like that. In space distance, that's actually, you know, a couple of million miles. So for it to be switching sides back and forth like that, planets don't move that way.
I noticed that. I noticed that the other day when I was walking. I seen a bright star next to the moon. I had no idea what it was. I had to go home and Google it. I guess it was Mars or something. But if you have something skipping around nightly, that's a little odd.
Yeah, that's what we were told. Everything was apparent. If you see this, it's Mars. It's Mars. But it's kind of like I said. You know, planets don't move like that. And I thought that was a little weird. And then a friend of mine actually put it up on Facebook. Anyone else see what the hell that is flying over the sky? You know, he was seeing something out there. I ended up missing it because I didn't see the post until it was too late. But yeah, we get stuff quite frequently. We're at the Douglas Channel. And we get stuff pretty frequently over it.
I know you were talking about on the intro about the meteor near the Air Force Base. That's actually called a bolide. It's spelled B-O-L-I-D-E. And it's a meteor that explodes in the atmosphere. There are actually two classifications of it. There's a bolide and a super bolide. And the difference being brightness of the meteor when it enters the atmosphere. A bolide, and this kind of gets into some technical stuff, I don't want to go into all of it, but there's something called an apparent magnitude, sorry, I had to think of the word, which registers like a negative 14. Well, a super bolide registers it like a negative 17, so it's very bright. It's actually brighter than the moon. And these things cause these huge sonic, when they come through, they cause these huge booms. The one that happened, there have been two in Russia that I know of. There was Tunguska, which was a good way back. And then there was one in I don't know if I can say it right. It's Russian. It's Chelyabinsk, I think is the way it's pronounced. That was in 2013. The one in 2013 injured like 900 people and damaged I don't know how many buildings. And actually the Russians thought that it was some form of an attack by us. because of what it was. They thought it was some kind of a weapon. It turns out that, it wasn't. Tunguska was in 1907 or 1908. I think it was 8. There's a lot to it. You can look it up online. My memory on it's a little fuzzy. I used to know a lot more about it because I did some research on it, and all my notes, sadly, were gone. But this is all I kind of can recall from memory. But it was an impact event, and it was actually the largest impact on Earth of a meteor striking the Earth. And it flattened something like 770 square miles or something like that. It was huge. I mean, it was just a big thing. But if anybody wants to look that up, that's what they can look that up. But I just wanted to mention it because I knew about it from your intro, so I wanted to talk about it a little bit. I didn't want to get too much off topic, but I throw it out there just because.
It's just a matter of time before one of these things sneaks through the grid and flattens a city or something like that. I know it's not paranormal or anything, but I just thought it was interesting. You know, if these little ones can squeak by, why not something a little bit bigger? Like the one in 2013, that was, I remember that. There's a lot of videos of that, some incredible videos of, window shattering and the explosion and...
It actually blew people off. It blew people off their feet. You know, it was so powerful that it would just knock you down. There were all kind of injuries, and I don't know if there were any deaths involved. There may have been, but it was quite something. And the one before that, the one in the Tunguska strike, thankfully. Although I'm sure there were probably injuries, and I don't know if there were deaths or not, but thankfully it was in an area where it wasn't exactly highly populated. There were no confirmed deaths, as far as I know, in Tunguska. There were a few possible deaths that they said they could have been, but they didn't know for sure. And then, of course, you have to think about where it's at, too. You're not going to get a lot of information from that area. It really was a huge, huge thing.
I remember seeing a documentary about it.
Tunguska, it was like almost like 50, I think it was like almost equivalent to like a 15 megaton bomb.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was big. It was a big deal. I did some research on that for a UFO group that had asked me to look into some stuff, and I kind of came up with some stuff on that, even though it's not a UFO, obviously, but still, they had questions and they wanted some stuff, so I did some research on that whole kind of thing, and it's really fascinating. But it's kind of naturally occurring. It's sort of like a crapshoot, you know. Like you say, you're going to get one at some point because you've already had one that hit the Earth, and then you've had several that detonated in the atmosphere, you know. So, for all those people that have bunkers and whatnot, I think if one of those hit the Earth where your bunker was at, I don't think it would do you a whole lot of good. The one in Tunguska, like you said, it flattened like 770 square miles were just flattened. So I don't know if an underground bunker would help you a whole lot. Anyway, I didn't want to get too far off your topic, but that was what that was. I knew because you talked about it earlier, so I'll just kind of throw it out there a little bit.
Well, if I ever get rich, I'm going to get a bunker, and Sherry, you can come hang with me in the apocalypse if there's enough warning.
Okay, I can join you. No problem. We get along.
Only problem I have with that is it wouldn't be like a Taco Bell or a McDonald's, you know. And I don't know. I mean, I would have issues with all the culinary issue would not be good with me. I like to eat. I don't know if I can get by too well without some of the staples. I mean, I don't know, but we'd have to see.
I'm with you on that. I would be an adjustment growing vegetables in a survival situation what I really want are carne asada tacos. Well, I guess
you'd
I
have
could
to find a way to
around.
Make your own beer, you know?
Yeah.
You have to make your own beer or something because, I mean, post-apocalyptic, at least we need to have a beer every once in a while.
Yeah, it'd be more than once in a while. I'd be lit the entire time of the apocalypse.
Anyway,
tacos and beer in a bunker. There's nothing better than that. So, what have you guys come across any interesting cases, paranormal cases, lately?
Well, yeah.
Sadly, the one we've been focusing on the most right now, I have to wait to get permission to actually talk about. That's been one of the bad things. We have been doing some, I guess you would say we're kind of going back to places we had been before, especially one that for the longest time we couldn't talk about simply because if we tried to talk about it, everything just kind of died anytime we even mentioned the name of the location. And that's a place here in Kitimat called Dyke Road. And I'm still reviewing the evidence on that, but drastic stuff has come from that. And actually, here, maybe in 3 weeks, we're planning on taking a person. We'll be putting a video up on our Facebook page, which if you look for it, you can find it under if you search at Paranormal BC. I think the last time I was on, I gave the wrong address, but it's at Paranormal BC. There was a lady that contacted our group after seeing one of our previous videos from that, and she ran into, while we were running the actually negative energies there, even two of our members of our group ended up with attachments from it, and we had to call in removal people, and I did house blessings and, you know, did holy water and everything. But she ran into the other side of the coin. She actually ran into a very helpful, and we'll get full details when we put out the video, but what she was telling us was that her and a couple of other people had decided to go searching and, you know, just kind of going around in the road. Before the weather had gotten too horrible, we were getting cold, but we hadn't gotten snow or anything yet. And as she decided she had gone it was a little too rough on the road for her car. There was too much ice, so she was going to turn around. And where we're heading is Dyke Road, a lower Dyke Road that's been put up off of one of the local rivers here, which actually there's a huge history we just learned, just started learning about with it. I've been putting out feelers and finally got somebody that actually knew the information and was able to give a lot of details. But anyway, she was attempting to turn her car around. And like I said, this is a really narrow road. It's basically a lane and a half. It's not a two-lane road. It's about a lane and a half. And as she got her car turned so far, she was reversing it back, and all of a sudden it sounded like somebody hit the trunk of her car twice. Bam, bam. And, of course, she slammed on the brakes thinking, oh crap, I've missed somebody, and I ended up hitting them. Well, she gets out and someone else who was with her got up to look, and turns out that there was no one there. But when they looked, they noticed that had she literally gone back another inch, her tires would have went off and she would have went into the ditch off the road backwards. So whatever hit her car stopped her from literally driving off of the road into a ditch.
That kind of makes you believe in guardian angels when stuff like that happens, you know?
Well, I always hate to talk about stuff before I actually go over the evidence to make sure we got it. But we were using a spirit box and we were going through. And to be honest with you, we had the removal done and the attachment. The activity in that area reported and from us personally, has dropped drastically. So it's almost like whatever was there, at least the strongest of what was there, isn't there anymore. It literally, I mean, we're talking where we were getting stuff, people messaging us almost daily talking about, well, did you hear about this happening? Did you hear about that happening? Well, this happened to me, this happened to me, and back and forth like that. Now, it's been months and it's nothing. But we actually were there. A member of the team has got a new 4x4 truck because, like I said, this is a rough dirt road. And we were actually going through it. We decided, why not? We'll do the spirit box. We start up the spirit box, and we're doing this, and we're going through it. And Dan, one of the other members, he's just going through, and he's asking the standard questions. And then he's like, come on, somebody respond to me. Like, you know, are you a human? Nothing. Are you a demon? Nothing. Are you the devil? Nothing. Are you an angel? Yes. Now, the yes I heard clears the bell. I have no doubt. That was exactly what was said on that. Yes, as soon as he says that. And then he goes, well, if you're an angel, can you tell me your name? And it says Azrael.
Which angel's so, that? I'm not.
I think you were the one that did. You looked that up yesterday, didn't you, Michael? Can you remember?
Oh, you know I looked it up. I look up everything.
I can't remember if I know it's an archangel, but I can't remember what exactly. Azrael is more mentioned in the Hebrew Bible than in the what we have the Christian Old Testament.
Every religion has different words for the angels mentioned, but the angels, if you think about it, like Michael, Raphael, Azrael, they all end in E-L. And that E-L at the end is kind of like what signifies them as an angelic being. But Azrael in the biblical Hebrew is the angel of destruction and renewal. It's kind of like it's not the angel of death. It's the angel that God sends to collect, you know, when someone passes and to take someone, but he doesn't do it on his own. He only works, you know, and like I said, I'm not trying to get into anybody's religion and, you know, I'm certainly not a religious scholar, but he's kind of like the one who helps God. He's one who helps God, you know, is, it translates to angel of God, help from God, one whom God helps. And I'm reading this because I wrote it down. I made notes the other day because if I don't make notes anymore, I forget stuff. And I hate to admit that, but when I had my car wreck back in 2008, I had a pretty good concussion. And so if I don't write a lot of things, I could just recall, you know, if I don't write them down, I kind of have to. Takes longer to pick them back up. In Islam, it's kind of a different take on it. All the religions have a little bit of a different take on the angels as far as their attributes, and their names, of course, are different. That was the basic gist of it. But it wasn't a negative. It was not a negative angel by any means. It wasn't a fallen angel by any means. And that's what we could find on it. I had several books on angelic beings, and of course I lost them all when we had a fire a few years back, and I lost all my whole library went up. And I had many books on that I could have actually read things, but. That's what we kind of found out about that. And we haven't really – we've got to go over that evidence some more. We really need to listen to that a little more and see if there's something else in that. But I thought that was pretty interesting.
And it's like I said, we also were finding a lot of information about Dyke Road that we had previously not known. because I'd been putting feelers out and talking to the people I know in the community, and they were like, "Nah, we just don't know." And I'd always this area, the whole both Kitimat Town and Kitimat Village were First Nations forever. They've been here for like 10,000 years or something. But I was wondering, you know, this is a freshwater area. It's just a prime location. I don't know, why wasn't there, because no one could tell me. I was like, well, wasn't there at least a village or something there, you know? No one could tell me. And finally I did find out that, in fact, the Haisla Nation was, I guess you would say, semi-nomadic, but it was in one small area. What they would do is they had different villages for each season of hunting. Like if the elk were running, they would have one village. Fishing, one of their main staples in their diet was a small fish called a ulican, and it used to run in the river here. And I found out that was actually a Haisla fishing village for the ulican, and that there was actually, I believe, four different villages in this just this area that they would move back and forth to depending on the season for fishing or hunting. And that when the settlers came, they found them in the location that is now Kitimat Village and just assumed this was their homeland and that was it. That none of the other stuff they bothered. And they kind of moved in and took over. But they actually had different villages all over. There was, I think they said there was four of them. And where Lower Dyke Road is now was at one time a Haisla village for fishing. That would have, you know, obviously that cut off the main supply of food for the Haisla Nation, and it would have caused conflict. The other thing that happened much more recently is the fact that that was also a place believed to be a UFO landing spot in 1967. There were reports of a mechanical sound and lights coming from the woods around Lower Dyke Road, and the RCMP and several locals went in to investigate this, thinking at that time it could have been, you know, a downed Russian plane or something like that. They go in looking for it. Well, they ran into something. There was apparently one of the RCMP officers shot whatever it was. I've gotten different things. I've heard that it was like someone heard two gunshots. Another one said it was like four or five. But anyway, he swears he put bullets into this thing and it didn't stop it. They call everybody out of the woods. They set up a perimeter around the whole area and have 24-hour-a-day guard stationed there to make sure no one could get in or out of those woods.
What did it look like? How did they describe it?
There is actually very little information from the actual description that I can find. I can only find two different reports of it online.
When did you say that was?
When?
What year was that?
1967.
All right. Is that anywhere near Falcon Lake?
I don't think so. That name doesn't sound familiar around here.
Because there's another UFO incident in 67 in Canada. Falcon Lake was quite a big deal, and there's actually a pretty good, let's see here. I'm sorry. I'm sure.
Yeah, the name familiar to
how
me.
About,
from
how about,
area.
Is there a Shag Harbor near there?
Oh, I've heard of Shag Harbor.
Shag Harbor was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it was like, wasn't that craft that was flying, like some fishermen or something, and all this molten slag was falling off of this flying craft?
Yeah, I think there was actually a dog that got killed. Something exploded.
Yeah,
And I didn't know if that might have been around the same area or not. I'm not that familiar with.
Falcon Lake is in Manitoba, and Shag Harbor is actually in Nova Scotia. Manitoba is actually closer to here, but it's still a good, you know, 8-hour drive. And Sag Harbor is like on the other side of the country. I'm West Coast and that's East Coast.
So it sounds like Canada has a rich history of UFO sightings.
I've read one other place, and I can't find that again. I don't know if the site got taken down or what, but there was actually one believed to have crashed on a highway that leads from Kitimat Village to the Kitimat town, and believed in the 70s. It was the 50s or the 70s. I cannot remember which, but that was another one that happened around here. It's like I said, we get light through here all the time. And all through even the more – this is a really remote kind of area. And I have to explain that to, like, my friends from the States. There is U.S. remote, and then there's Canada remote. And they are two very, very different remotes. You know, if you don't see a McDonald's or a Walmart within 10 minutes of each other in the U.S., that's pretty remote. Here –
yeah.
We got to drive like almost an hour to get to Walmart or McDonald's. And that is, we're not actually as far away from them that, as I've lived before. My wife went to took a college course here, and we had to move to a small town called Hazleton. And that, we were one of four houses on a mountain. There were more cows near us than there were people. Literally, the cows outnumbered probably 10 to 1.
Jeez. That's a little...
Sounds like kind of living.
Very
real. You know,
actually, I loved it there.
We got some Bigfoot evidence from there, too, actually. We had to call in the... we actually reported back to the BFRO, the guys that do Finding Bigfoot. You know, that the TV show?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We actually had audio that someone had taken that was a friend of, was either a friend or family of Joe's wife. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that right, Joe?
That was actually other direction. Yeah, that was in another reserve called New Ianch.
Yeah,
when you go into Terrace, which is kind of the I guess you could loosely call it a city hub here, but it's got the Walmart and the McDonald's in it, so it's considered the city here. But basically, you go two different directions. One will lead you to Hazleton, and one takes you up, and it's actually a beautiful, beautiful area. If anyone ever comes up this way, there's actually a state park there, a lava bed. Out of an old dormant volcano that erupted. But there is a village up in that area called New Ianch and another one called Kinkolas. I hope I'm not mispronouncing those too horribly when you throw in the native language with my basically my Kentucky redneck southern twang. I can slaughter a word easily. But that is massive amounts of Bigfoot activity from that area. Matter of fact, I was just getting messaged maybe 2 days ago from a person asking if we would be interested in coming up there and helping them look for Bigfoot. Basically get sent recordings of this animal. And I myself have heard it. And I mean, like, in person. And I can tell you, I've heard wolves around here. I've heard bears. I've heard coyotes. I've heard, you know, all the other number of wildlife that lives in this area. There is nothing on earth that sounds like this. It is a absolutely, just to be blunt, it's absolutely terrifying to hear it, because you know whatever that is it's huge, and the lung power this thing has, and as long and as loud as it can go, it makes you go cold when you first hear it. And that's, you know, I've personally had an experience, and that was in the near the area where Mike was just talking about, around Hazleton, in a place called Morristown. We were actually coming back from a little getaway, me and my wife and the kids, and we were pumping gas. This was a little reserve gas station. It had to be 9:30, 10 o'clock tonight. needless to say, this is a small when I say a small reserve, we're talking, I think there's maybe 500 people in it. If we're spotting a point, it might hit 500. They roll up the streets there at night. This little gas station is the only thing with any lights on, anything. It's just completely dead. I just got through pumping the gas. My wife had went in to get pop and a snack and whatever. We were making the last leg of the race home, and as I'm closing the lid on the gas tank, this thing lets out a yell, and me and my wife both just throw dead center in the middle of what we were doing. Her eyes were huge, and she's like, "Did you hear that?" And I'm imagining by the look on my face, you could probably already tell I did. And every animal, for as far as you can hear, went absolutely nuts. I mean, every dog started snarling and barking, just everything. It was a complete instant turnaround.
I've always been skeptical of Bigfoot. Have there ever been any encounters up in Canada where people have, like, physically run into them or any been assaulted or anything?
Well, actually, where I live, and I've heard one near here. We do have one that ends up in the village. I actually personally know a person that has seen one. Actually, I know a couple of people that have seen one. One was, I believe, in the 80s. May have been in the 70s. He has a soccer field. And him and a couple of his friends were out at the soccer field. So it's kind of a kid hangout. There's not a whole lot to do here. And it came up off of the shoreline. And it actually chased them home. But, yeah, he was like, this thing had to have been about 8 feet tall. He's like, if we didn't have a head start on it, they all ran into one guy's house. The first one is like, the first house they could get to, they got in it. He's like, because this thing closed the distance faster than anything we'd ever seen. Now, the next one I heard about was actually, I think it was 2 years ago, and a guy was outside of his house smoking, I believe, about 12:30, 1 o'clock at night, and he saw it cross the road. And at first, he thought it was a person just kind of standing there until it crossed the two-lane road in two steps.
Wow.
There is a report of a man being taken by a Bigfoot, a Sasquatch, in British Columbia, and it happened in nineteen twenty four, I think it was. And the man's name was, hang on, Tony, give me a second. Albert Osman, I believe it was. I believe it was Albert Osman. I don't know how to spell the last name, but reported being abducted by a Bigfoot. That was in British Columbia. Near an inlet.
So he was kidnapped by Bigfoot and then escaped?
That's what he claims. He claims he was kidnapped by a Bigfoot in hell for several days. Joe, do you know a place called Toba? Is there a Toba Inlet?
Not right offhand to me,
I remember reading about the Osman case. That was one of the few cases that, and there was more than one of them, if I recall. There were a group of them, and he got away. But that was like in 1924, I think it was. And people that want to know, I'm sure they could look it up. But my memory on it. I researched it a long time ago.
Go on.
I'm sorry. The only thing about Bigfoot for me, I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of hoaxes. There are. I mean, you know, obviously. But there have been tracks that have been found. And the characteristics of those tracks indicate that they're not a cardboard cutout or a piece of wood strapped to a shoe. You know, you can see the ridges in the foot. You can see the mid-tarsal break in the foot. And, you know, so there are. And there is one doctor, Dr. Jeff Meldrum. I'm sure you guys have probably heard of him, from Idaho State University, that have a huge collection of these castings of these feet and toes. But I think there's too many reports of it, and there's too many different cultures that report the same type thing that are not connected. They're too far apart by miles, yet they report the same kind of thing for it to be made up.
Well,
I
just...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Go on.
I was just going to say that I think if these things are out there, I just would have thought there would have been more concrete evidence, bodies. And I've discussed why with other people why bodies may not have been found. But with everybody camping this and that, I just think there'd be more conclusive proof of Bigfoot.
You know, honestly, I felt the same way. And I've actually gotten into a little bit of a Twitter debate about this with Zach Bagan from Ghost Adventure. Because, I'd always felt the same way. Because as a kid, of course, it was big, you know, and I was like, oh, yeah, this is great. I love this. I was all into it. But as I got older, I kind of got into the, okay, now something that big would have to leave more, you know, there have to be more to it. There would have to be, you know, bodies and dwellings and things like that. And until I came here and I really saw, like, there's a stretch of highway actually between Merritt, British Columbia, and Vancouver, British Columbia. I don't know if you guys have seen it or not, but there was actually a TV show about the highway there called The Highway Through Hell. It's the Valhalla Highway. And there's actually a stretch of road about 150 miles where the only thing around you for that 150 miles is that road. They don't go into those woods. There's not turnoffs. There's nothing except for like three spots before you hit the halfway point. And they are emergency turnoffs so you can go back to Merritt. I believe it's Merritt. I hope I'm saying this right. If not, I've got the wrong, because it's Merritt, and then it leads to the next town is Hope. Because that's for you to turn around and go back to Merritt to get gas if you don't have enough gas to make it. Because literally there's nothing. There's like I said, I think three turnoffs and one area with an outhouse, and that's it for 150 miles.
Maybe they do go in, they just never come out.
That is very possible. We also have one of the highest cases of missing people in anywhere in the world. There's actually near us, actually, starts in Terrace, leads to a town called Bridge Church, the Highway of Tears. And it's pretty much internationally known for how many women have gone either missing or have been murdered on the highway. And to date, the one person they say that they captured that did tie into one of the crimes, I think personally, not to get off on anything else, but I personally feel like they added his name or his crime strictly to this list so they could say, hey, look, we caught somebody. Because his victims were way away, like almost miles away from the highway. Yet they say that they don't count anyone within or outside of a 20-mile radius. Yet they count his victims at 100 miles just so they could say, hey, look, we caught him. At least that's my opinion. But, you know, like I said, I don't really want to get into that. That has nothing to do with the paranormal. And actually, I do have one other Bigfoot story from my region that is, I guess you would say, sort of into the folklore, told to me by the man's son, and it was told to me as proof, as absolute fact. And at the time, some of the Heisler they would hunt from boats. They would go down the channels here and hunt from the boats. They were hunting for either moose, deer, bear, something like that. And as they were coming down, this guy's father, which he's an older man now, so his father, this had to have happened in probably the 30s or 40s, saw what he assumed was a large black bear and got up and he shoots it. When he hit it dead center, it stood up, and that's when he realized that it was actually a Sasquatch. Now, the Heisla actually do hold the Sasquatch not really like in a higher regard, but they acknowledge the existence and they acknowledge it as a beast of not of this reality. It possesses powers. It is from I guess you'd say from another realm. And there was like a subliminal connection between the two. And he was, I guess, some would say gifted and some would say cursed with the ability of being able to see the future.
From that encounter?
From that encounter, from killing it.
Wow.
Huh. But another part was they were not allowed to take the body, of course. And even if they had it, this was, like I said, in the 1930s. I would have to look that up to get the exact date, and I can't exactly remember his name now. But like I said, it was his son that told me the story, and his son is probably in his, I would say, in his 60s now. So, but yeah, it was believed that the Sasquatch basically gave him the gift, and it lived on in some form through him. And because, like I said, if he had known it was that, he would have never taken a shot. Because like I said, the Heisley acknowledged the existence and treat it differently as I don't want to call it like a deity or something, but as a being from another realm. They kind of, I guess you would put it in, some people would put it with the sense of like the fairies or the little people from Ireland and stuff like that. It's from a mystic realm that we are not part of anymore. And it gave him the ability of being able to see the future. Predictions were actually pretty accurate, and from what I can tell from the people who actually heard him speak about them, he was accurate. He was very accurate in what he saw, and he never had that ability before that date.
What's your take
on? Can
I
ask you, Joel? Have you ever heard about the Skinwalkers?
I have heard of them. Up here, we don't have necessarily skinwalkers. What they have here is a creature called the Otter Man. The powers are basically the same as a skinwalker. They're shapeshifters. But they're giveaway. And unlike, I believe it's the Navajo that believes the skinwalker is actually summoned by a witch. This would fit into the same realm of like Bigfoot or something like that. But it is a evil entity.
Yeah, it is. That's Napa that you're talking about. I hate to say I read about that too. I read way too much stuff. But Yeah. The Navajo really, I studied their culture a good bit for some research I had done a few years back. They have very definite things about ghosts, spirits, and witches. And we're not talking about the witches now, the ones that the New Age movement kind of witches. We're not talking about that. We're talking about people that practice magic of a darker nature, and they're considered not to be friendly. As a matter of fact, most won't speak about it. You won't get one to talk about it, because I actually had I wouldn't call him a friend. He was an acquaintance that I'd talked to several times. I mean, we were friendly, but we weren't like, I didn't talk every day and like that. But when I asked him about that one time, all he said was, we don't talk about that. And that I got from the tone that that's where we leave it, and I don't ask no more, so that's what I did. Out of respect for his culture, I wasn't going to push him and make him try to talk to me, because they don't talk about it.
I noticed we got to wrap it up here. I'm looking at the clock, but I do notice we have a caller. Are you guys open to take a question? I don't know if they're just listening or maybe have a question.
Yeah, I'll give it a shot if I know the answer. If I don't know the answer, I'll say I don't know the answer.
All right, let's bring him on. Caller, you're live on Paranormal Horizons. Who's this? Anyone there? Hello? Hello?
Oh, yes. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I just...
Okay. How about now?
Yeah, I hear him fine.
Yeah.
Yep, coming through on mine, too.
I just mute, so if it mutes you again, I'm going to unmute you. It's the system's being wacky, but go ahead.
Oh, I see. All righty. Yeah, I'm enjoying the show, and I would like to add a bit of a strange bit of information that I got from a pastor a couple of weeks ago. Now, keep in mind, first of all, my name is Dr. Hawkins. I'm from Houston, Texas. I'm what's called a naturopathic physician. And I grew up in what you would call paranormal home. And I could see auras around people entire life. Ever since I could remember, I could see things most people wouldn't believe exist. I could see into the so-called higher and lower dimensions. So with that said, I spoke to a gentleman who's a good friend of mine, who's a pastor in Florida, and he told me that a buddy of his came out, got him one day, and they grabbed a couple of beers, and they went to this particular spot in South Florida where, the sky is extremely clear. Now, according to what he said, and I believe the gentleman, my intuition was basically off the radar as he gave his account of this event. But he said that the gentleman took him out in the middle of nowhere, and they're having a drink. And suddenly, you could see the stars. Then there was this black presence that sort of moved over the sky, almost like a smog of some sort. And he said when that happened, they saw something fall out of it. And this thing hit the ground. And he said that they could hear it approaching them. And he turned to the guy, his friend, and said, "What the hell was that?" And he said, "You see that, don't you?" And then he said, "Yeah, I saw that, but what is it?" He said, "I brought you out here so that you could tell me that I wasn't crazy." Now, keep in mind, both of these gentlemen are pastors. And he said, of course, they hauled butt. But the point is this, story is true. And for myself, being highly intuitive, I believe that gentleman was telling me the absolute truth. I've seen some strange things, y'all, some very strange things. And you got to understand something. We are literally living in levels of string theory. And string theory is just barely scratching the surface, you know. So what if, again, this is just an if, but what if this entity that they call Bigfoot or whatever the heck you want to refer to it as is such a creature that they described up in Florida, or should I say down in Florida? You know, what if this is some type of interdimensional creature, kind of like shapeshifters or whatnot? But this is very strange, stuff. So, I mean, as far as superstitions, wives' tales, all of that, I don't get with any of that. I'm a scientist. I love science, but at the same time, you got to move beyond the realm of dogma, and you have to open your subconscious and use what a good friend of mine would say, the other you.
Well, and obviously, as far as from a scientific standpoint, you know, the Drake equation would indicate that there is certainly life on other planets, and, you know, because of the sheer number of them, the fact that the sheer number of planets that exist, that ours could not be the only one to sustain life, you know, even though it may not be life as we understand it as a carbon-based life form, still. And there is also some people who believe that the Bigfoot or a Sasquatch or whatever you would like to call it is some form of an alien life form that visits its planet on a basis and then leaves or whatever and doesn't stay here. It's transitory. And having no evidence. Hello?
I can hear you.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, you're still here.
All right, I'm here. I thought I lost it. Having no evidence to the contrary and not being able to say one way or the other, you know, I personally would have, I have no way to dispute that. It is certainly as valid a claim as any other claim. And if these two gentlemen, I mean, I've seen things too, you know, happen that I can't explain. And I cannot disparage their accounting of what they saw, and it is certainly plausible. It is certainly as plausible to me as anything else that anyone would suggest. So I have no problem with that conclusion at all. That it would be some sort of a hyperdimensional being.
I don't doubt that that's impossible at all either. I mean, there's so much about in this universe we don't understand. But I want to say I'm excited that a, you know, a naturopathic doctor called in, because that's somebody that's embedded in medicine and science. And to have somebody with an open mind, you know, that has spent so many years in school to be able to do that and is experiencing paranormal things, I think that's amazing and fantastic.
Yeah, and it's always good to have somebody. I mean, and Joe and I have even talked about, you know, we love when people call in, because, like I said, if I don't know the answer, I'll just tell you flat up, I don't know the answer. But, you know, I think in this field you have to be open-minded enough to dig and research and look at the angles. You know, they said this happened. Okay, well, let's look at it. We'll dig into it some more. I mean, if these two gentlemen saw what they saw, then there's probably more people that have saw it than just them. You know, so I mean, and it's like that to me, as far as I'm concerned. For every one person that has enough nerve to call up and...
Are you still there? Can you guys hear me at all? there's a lot of weirdness going on. There's like interdimensional beings inside the dashboard. It's automatically putting people on hold. Calls are dropping. The universe or the government does not want us talking about interdimensional beings. So I have no idea what's going on.
Well,
we got to wrap. Go ahead.
Well, I'd like to say this as well. Now, a friend of mine told me some things that I resonated with quite well fairly recently, I'd say about 2 years ago. And I've noticed a lot of the underground scientists that I talked to are saying the same thing. They've experienced the same types of things. And I'm wondering if any of you ladies or gentlemen have experienced something similar. But in a nutshell, these are scientists that build biophysics / metaphysical types of instruments to heal the human body through the aura. So it heals the chakras and spiritual anatomy and so on and so forth. He built this device that puts out about 300,000 volts, and it's what they call an electron donor system, and it produces this scalar field, and the cells of the human body along with the molecules pretty much absorb the frequencies that they need to heal themselves. Well, he said that once he completed the device, he didn't tune it yet, so it was producing probably around 50 million frequencies at the same time. He said, so he fired it up. It has this old Tesla coil and things of this nature, pancake coil, et cetera. And he said once he fired it up, it was going for about 30 seconds, and he got a very strange feeling. And when he went outside of his garage, there was this huge spaceship above his house.
Wow.
And he said the message that he got was that these entities, whatever the heck they were very interested in humanity's healing efforts. You know, because a lot of these technologies have been suppressed. As an inventor myself, I've experienced something similar. And I've talked to probably 7 or 8 different doctors, or what they would call rogue scientists, who've experienced the same thing. And I'm wondering if any of you have experienced something like that. And if you have, I have some gentlemen that you should probably talk to who are scientists.
Yeah, well, personally, like we do, because Michael and I have been working on a theory for quite some time dealing with frequency level communication. Basically, we are attempting to put it in a nutshell and to get it wrapped up as quick as possible. We're basically working on a method of working off of the electronic voice phenomena theory to map out the frequency range to be able to communicate to both ways, where you wouldn't have, like with a spirit box, blah, 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 from the radio station. We would actually be able to broadcast on that frequency range and receive from that frequency range and be able to communicate to whatever's on the other side, whether it actually be heaven, hell, another dimension, of another plane of existence. However you want to look at it, we would be able to literally, like, pick up the device and go, hey, so-and-so, and they would be able to answer. Whenever we do this stuff, the activity level around us takes a gigantic, huge spike. We go from, like, flat, nothing, to knocks at doors, people talking, things of that nature. And I actually have recordings of a sound, and it's the only way I can put it. It's a frequency sound that I have not been able to explain in any way, shape, or form. I have no clue what caused it, and I cannot get it duplicated. I've tried TVs, microwaves, refrigerators, all of the common household stuff, and none of it duplicates this.
Oh, that's
well,
a sound
I
heard.
Something.
That creepy.
Is fascinating. We should definitely talk. If you wish, I can leave you my information. But like I said, I have a group of scientists that would love to hear what you just said. And I'll tell you something else. Such a device has already been invented. The government put a secrecy order on it back in the 60s. But guess what? I have it right here in front of me right now. I can show you better than I can tell you, as they say here in the South. I can literally show you. And there's a reason they put a secrecy order on it. Now, I'm going to tell you like Igor would say, listen with the other you. Listen to what's coming behind my voice, right? Because I'm going to speak this in code, and I pray that y'all can hear me. Ultrasound, believe it or not, is, well, let me put it another way. There are four types of telepathy. Two of those types of telepathy use ultrasonic waves. Now, keep in mind, human brain waves are in part radio waves. So obviously they travel through the air. You know, there are particular devices that were invented by what some would call indigo children back in the 60s that would literally open those channels within your DNA that allowed you to communicate like dolphins and whales. Government said, well, damn, wouldn't that make a good weapon? They kidnapped the inventors, and, you know, the technology got suppressed. But there are a few such devices floating around, and like I said, I have one of them. So if we had a group of scientists and thinkers, you know, like yourselves, and we could show these devices too, along with a whole host of other devices, I think that perhaps, you know, forming some type of think tank, we could come up with some of the real answers that many of us seek.
So we're over time, so we got to wrap it up. So now, how are you? How you guys should communicate? So what's the best way for you guys to communicate so you can kind of get together and share info?
Okay, well, I tell you what, if you could send me a message through one of my websites, it's called Hip Hop Therapeutics, hiphoptherapeutics.com.
You got that, guys?
I wrote it down.
Okay, cool. Well, we got to wrap.
Therapeutics.com?
Yes, yes, hiphoptherapeutics.com.
Okay, .com. Okay, I got it, just in case. That's great. Thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate you, and we appreciate your support. Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much, and I thank you for allowing me to put in my two cents. Great show.
Oh, anytime. Call on. We're here every Sunday at 8 o'clock Pacific time, so you're always welcome. Like to get
thank
some
you,
feedback.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I'm really super curious.
Different.
I'm super curious about this device now. Man, I would love to. I would almost want to be like a test subject for some of these things, you know. It'd be really interesting. And I totally believe that the government's suppressing technology. It's, you know, the people out there that have figured out how to run cars on water or whatever, and then they end up disappearing and the technology gets lost, and all the Tesla stuff that was stolen by the government when he died. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if there was some information technology out there that's being suppressed. But yeah, we got to wrap it up. We're over time. Do you have anything to add, Sherry?
No, and Joel just said everything's breaking up. He says, I can't hear you. So that's kind of weird. I don't know what's going on tonight, but, you know, it's one of those things. I don't know. Once in a while, we'll have a glitch in the computer system.
It's the government. They don't want us talking about certain things. I'm starting to get convinced of that. Things conveniently get strange, you know, when we talk about certain things. It makes me wonder.
Wow. Anyway, we want to thank both of them for Joel and Michael for being on. I hope they're still on. Any of you still on? Probably not. But anyway, they're part of the British Columbia, the Paranormal North Coast British Columbia team also. So, yes, there's a lot of amazing things happening with their team, and you know, I'm really excited to like I said, be part of it. They're really a bunch of solid guys, and they're just really good at research and knowing what they're doing. So, and we're all learning and growing together, and it's a good thing. But anyway, we're going to welcome Clive Lewis back hopefully next week, and hopefully he's got everything squared away, and Yeah, we're looking at the host of Ground Zero. He's been on, he is on, not been on, but he's around, what is it, over 360 syndicated radio shows across the U.S., and he's a local boy, very well known, and we're glad to have him back. So each and every guest is so special, and we really are, we really appreciate each and every one of you.
Absolutely. Looking forward to talking to Clyde Lewis again. Well, with that, we hope everybody has a fantastic and safe week. We'll see everybody next Sunday, p.m. West Coast time. And be sure to give us a like on Facebook, on Paranormal Horizons on Facebook. And with that, we'll bid you adieu, and we'll see you guys next week. Good night, everyone.
Hey, take care, everybody. Peace.